This week on the Friday edition, we hear an interview with Danielle Frank, a Hoopa Valley tribal member, activist, and youth coordinator with Save California Salmon. It was first heard on November 15, 2022 on the West Coast Water Justice Podcast. The interviewer was Natalie Kilmer. This is part one.
We do Dinyo Holiet, Hosaho na Holiet, Medaldi na Hue, Tinaldi na Hue, Hontananti na Hue, Hawanka Chink Such Dai. Hello, my name is Danielle Frank. My Hoopa name is Hosaho na, and I'm from the villages of Medelding, Tewinalding, and Hontananting along the Hoopa and Yurok in reservations in Northern California.
And your tribes originate in the areas known to settlers as the Trinity and Klamath River basins?
The Trinity and then one on the Klamath.
Thanks for clarifying. So can you tell us more about yourself and about your work?
I am a Hoopa tribal member, and I also have Yurok and Karuk ancestry. I'm the youth coordinator for Save California Salmon, as well as Miss Natinahue for the Hoopa tribe. I'm 19, and I've been doing this work for almost my whole life. I can remember being 7 years old, sitting in conference rooms where people were signing papers. And all I really understood is that we were there to make sure that nobody stole our river. And it's definitely kind of evolved from there. I grew up on the Hoopa Valley Indian Reservation, and I didn't leave until just a few days before college. The cultural significance that the Trinity and Klamath Rivers have to my people is what got me into this work in the first place. And it's definitely what keeps me here. Our cultures are very river-based. Almost everything that we rely on that makes us who we are come directly from the Trinity and Klamath Rivers. And as I got older, I definitely understood that more. And so I evolved my work around making sure that our cultural needs are always met and that no policy is going to take them from us and no diversion is going to make it so that our seventh generation doesn't know who they are. The work that I do is very important to me. It's as personal as it gets. Every day, I do my best to make sure that we are going to have the resources we need to be who we are for the rest of my life, and then hopefully the rest of my grandchild's life, and so on and so forth. A little about me, I graduated from Hoopa Valley High School in 2021, and I moved to Sacramento to go to cosmetology school, which didn't exactly fit into my life goals. It was more of a personal experience for me. While in Sacramento, I worked alongside the Assembly Board of California, specifically Assemblymember James Ramos, on a few things, one being AB 2022. I also worked with the State Water Resources Control Board. I was able to testify at the EPA building in Sacramento. I worked with a few tribes in the area, specifically Shingle Springs Rancheria, doing some presentations for their interns, holding press conferences regarding the Delta Conveyance Project. After a little over a year in Sacramento, I returned to Humboldt County, where I'm currently at, on the Hoopa Valley Indian Reservation. I'm going to the College of the Redwoods in Eureka, California, where I will, after finishing transferring to UC Davis, I am double majoring in political science with a focus in tribal law and environmental science, and double minoring in legal studies and communications. I do a little bit of everything that comes with Save California Salmon, which I am very happy and fortunate to be able to do. My work consists of about three different focuses: youth work, policy work, and then education. The youth work that I do, that is everything from the Trinity River cleanup that I help host every year that I brought back as an intern for SES, to the Rios to Rivers kayaking exchange that I was able to be part of in July. It was the Paddle Tribal Waters program, where I, alongside many other Native youth from the Klamath River Basin specifically, were training to be the first cohort to descend the Klamath River when the dams come down, which is going to be a historical moment for our people. it was an amazing experience to be able to not only train on a kayak on one of my home rivers, but also help Aisha Wilson with some curriculum that we developed surrounding traditional and ecological knowledge. I do a ton of raft trips with youth, just helping get those healthy relationships with our water on the Klamath and Trinity Rivers, also on the American near the Sacramento, helping Indigenous youth get that relationship with the water and also get to experience the water in a way that might be too expensive for them otherwise if we weren't able to provide that. And then I do a lot of work with the interns that we have at Save California Salmon. I started as an intern, and so I do help some of the interns with their projects. I also do a lot of the press articles and quotes for Save California Salmon, especially when it comes from an Indigenous youth perspective. Another aspect of my work is the education work that I do. This involves the curriculums that we've built in Save California Salmon, various class visits for many reasons, and then the cultural work that I kind of help implement at some of our summer camps, like the bear grass classes that I have and the weaving experiences that I'm able to help share with young Native youth. The last aspect of my job is the policy work that I'm really involved in. This is something that I've been doing since before Save California Salmon, that one of my mentors, Margot Robbins, who is now the head of cultural fire management and was then the director of Indian education, she introduced me to policy work regarding what was called an LNG pipeline in Southern Oregon. And I have become very involved since then. Today, my policy work looks like sitting alongside the assembly members of California, talking about bills that are going to affect Native people, also working with the water board, giving testimony on why some policies aren't fair for Native communities, and also stressing the fact that we need to make sure our communities are very involved in these fights and tribal consultation needs to be more meaningful than just a mass text to every tribe in California that this meeting is happening. And that's where I focus most of my energy.
Thanks for sharing that, Danielle. It's incredible you wear so many hats. I'm also curious if you can elaborate on your role as Miss Natanahoy.
Okay, so yeah, I am currently Miss Natanahoy of the Hoopa Valley Tribe. Miss Natanahoy is a position that is kind of won through the Hoopa Tribe. We have a big Sovereign's Day celebration, usually the weekend of August 15th, the date that we got our sovereignty and were declared our own tribe. That weekend was around the time that the Yurok and Hoopa reservations were finally recognized as two different tribes and two different reservations. So that's a really special time for my people. And during our Sovereign's Day celebration, Miss Natanahoy gives a talent to be performed in front of the community. Mine was public speaking, which is something that I find myself to be very talented at. And then a interview with the people who have been Miss Natanahoy in the past. And so Miss Natanahoy, the title means to be a woman in the community that young women can look up to, someone who is going to take a stand for their tribe, have conversations that need to be had, and kind of just be a leader for young Native women. And so this year I did apply and I did my process and was crowned Miss Natanahoy for 2022. I am using that platform to help restart the youth council for the Hoopa Valley Tribe in hopes that this youth council will have the power to lobby our actual council along with other organizations, and hopefully the Assembly Board of California and the Water Board, people who need to be lobbied to remember that Native youth exist and that we have a say in these fights.
Oh, I love that. Thanks for explaining. Your work is so expansive. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey as a young person coming into this work?
So my interest in this work stems from where I come from and who I am. As a Hoopa and Yurok Native person, I rely almost solely on the river to know who I am and to gather the materials that help me remember that. And so my interest stems from my family. I was 7 years old when my father took me to Salem, Oregon to witness a signing of papers regarding the removal of the Klamath Dams. And I can remember knowing that I was going because bad people were trying to take away our river, and I didn't want that to happen. My nickname on the res was Ducky, and kind of still is to this day, even though I'm an adult, because I felt a connection to the river. Even when I was young, I never wanted to leave the water. I always wanted to be next to the bank. And knowing that that was in jeopardy, even as a child, I wanted to be involved. And then a few years later, I think I was around 11 or 12, I met Margot Robbins, one of my longtime mentors. She helped me understand how I could fight some of these things that were happening. And she helped me understand policy and gave me my first introduction into public speaking. This was around the same time that I began to understand where most of our regalia comes from, and our basket materials, and the boat dance, and the things that that river gives me that are more than just recreation. And Margot took me to a panel for Native youth in Portland, Oregon, when I was in the eighth grade. It was regarding a liquid natural gas pipeline that was going to be put through Native American cemeteries and Native American sacred spaces and do really bad damage to some of the ecosystems and water. So I went and spoke in front of maybe about 400 people for the first time, and definitely got out of my comfort zone, but realized how much of an impact my voice could make. And from there, I went to high school to co-found the Hoopa Valley High School Water Protectors Club alongside Margot, where we discussed waterborne meetings and tried to elevate youth voices, especially Native youth voices who were students of Hoopa Valley High School. We went to waterborne meetings and actually demanded that we get hearings closer to our communities, because the hearings that were happening in Sacramento in the middle of a day were not accessible for our low-income communities. It was not possible for us to drive a 10-hour round trip to go make a 2-minute testimony and afford a hotel room. That was just not something that was available to us. So while we might have had the invite to be in those spaces, barely, it wasn't accessible. And as students of the Hoopa Valley High School Water Protectors Club, we actually got granted our ask and were given meetings in Redding, California, which were only about 2 hours away from our reservation, which was a huge win for us. And we were able to help organize one of those hearings where 9 tribes showed up and hundreds of people. There was prayer, there was song, people were outside because it was so full. And that was the first time that I really seen how much of an impact youth voices can make in this world. That led into the Yo Cali Fellowship that I did right after high school through Safe California Salmon, led into meeting Regina Chicazola, the executive director of SCS, who is now my boss and a friend. And it really started my career. And I'm now currently the youth coordinator of Safe California Salmon, which is kind of one of my dream positions. I have been super involved in environmental justice for as long as I can remember. And this position is allowing me to do more. It's allowing me to be involved in Native justice and becoming a person that I want, that I could have looked up to and that could have helped me, is one of my goals. And definitely being able to provide all of these experience for the youth in my community through my position at Save California Salmon is life-changing for me. That's kind of how I became involved and how I ended up here.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've been at it for a long time. I think you mentioned that you started around the age of 7. We've interviewed other tribal members on the Klamath and Trinity, but I think you're the youngest that we've interviewed for the podcast. So I'm hoping you can paint a picture of what was happening with the rivers through your lens as a child and young adult.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm 19 years old, and the fight for the Klamath Dam removal started the year before I was even born. So it definitely comes through a different lens from me, from my father, and from the elders in my community who've been involved in this fight. They speak of a time where our rivers were plentiful, we had an abundance of resources, we didn't have to fight for our main cultural lifeline. It was right there. And through my lifetime, I've never seen that. Maybe I have, but I don't remember. My whole life, all I've ever known is that the Klamath and Trinity were hurting, that the lifeline that made us who we are isn't healthy, and that people want to destroy it. And so I listen to these stories of these elders and my father and people that have been gone for a while now, telling these stories of a time where we were able to be who we are without a fight. And unfortunately, that's never been something that I've witnessed. Throughout my life, all I can remember is being young, you know, going swimming and knowing that that place felt like home, knowing that being in that water and surrounded by the sand and the rocks and the willows, something about that place just made me feel welcome and like I was sitting with my great grandma. And so as I got older, it got worse. Every summer, we got the notices that the river was full of blue-green algae and it wasn't safe for us to really swim in because ingesting that water could lead to sickness and in rare cases, even death. And so the stories that I have of that river are not being able to use it. The stories I have of that river are loving it so much that it hurts, yet watching it die in front of my eyes. And unfortunately, that's still the case. You know, we have to fight these diversions. We have to fight these dams. We have to fight all of these greedy corporations. And then we win. And then we have to fight again because they only have to win once, where we have to win every single time. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that if it continues in the way that it's been the last decade of my life, my kids will never have the stories, even I do, of feeling at home in that place that was meant for them.
In case listeners haven't caught up on the other episodes, where's all the water going?
A lot of the water that's diverted from the Trinity goes to private agriculture. Big ag is a serious issue. There is no reason that some of our biggest farms need to be in the middle of a desert. A lot of the water that gets diverted from the Trinity goes into the pockets of private farmers, and they buy so much of the water that only a small percentage goes to communities who actually need clean drinking water and showering water. That's something that we can all agree on. Everybody needs clean water. We have to change the way that agriculture is being implemented in America right now. The way that we are destroying our waterways is not sustainable. And that's something that's hurting my homelands the most. Big corporations buying that water, they are putting a monetary value on our cultural identity. And that's something that I have a huge issue with. And I know many others do too.
And specifically, that water is going into the Central Valley Project. So you're still young yourself, but why is it important to you that youth become involved in activism and water protection?
There are many reasons why youth voices are instrumental in these fights. A main example I talked about earlier, the Hoopa Valley High School Water Protectors Club was able to demand that these meetings be more accessible to our communities. And we got that. And that was something that no one had ever been able to do. That's a prime example of how impactful youth voices can be. I also think it's very important that youth be involved because we are the future. Seven generations is how far we need to be thinking. And so the closest people to, you know, our next generation is us, is the youth, the teenagers, the kids. And so for us to be involved in these fights, it's instrumental in making sure that we'll have what we need, because climate change isn't something of the future. It's something that's happening right now. And so if we're not involved in these conversations right now, our voices might not ever get heard. And this is going to affect our life more than anybody else. That's the reason that it's most important. And then one thing that I haven't really ever talked about publicly is how much advocacy helped me figure out how to use my voice. I wasn't always a super outgoing kid. And then I realized that somebody had to speak up for these issues, or nobody was going to, at least no kid was. And so I did. You know, America was founded on the genocide and murder of my people. Almost every system in America was built on the erasure of who I am. And so advocacy helped me find a way to use my voice in a way that can be world changing. I was never super comfortable in front of a lot of people. And recently I was in Vogue magazine. That was never something that I thought possible for myself. It was never something that I thought I would be comfortable with, trying to change the minds of some of the most influential people in our state. But here I am doing it on the daily. Growing up where I did on the Hoopa Reservation, it's not always common that someone is fighting for something better. And so I learned to do that. I learned to always fight for something better. And I wouldn't have done that without being involved in advocacy. So I think that not only is it important for the movement that youth be involved, but I think it's important for youth to be involved in the movement because of what it can do for them. Activism can provide a lot for youth. It can definitely help you find where you belong in this world, what you care the most about, and how to say that, how to get up and tell people why you care about what you do and why they need to care about it too.
Can you share with us some of your goals related to your work with Native youth, education, and activism?
One of my goals with my work in the public education system is to help youth realize that they have a space in this work and also show them the opportunities they have to get involved. Growing up, I had a much different education than most people in the public education system. I went to school on the Hoopa Reservation. When I got to high school, my local history teacher and my Hoopa language teacher was my Hoopa medicine woman. So I was being taught the history of my tribe and my people and my own language in a colonized school system. And so I grew up not realizing how bad the public education system was until I started working in it. And I realized that the curriculum that we use is entirely wrong. It is full of either lies about Native Americans, or it completely writes Native Americans out of the picture, leading others to believe that we are remnant of the past and that we no longer exist. And so I definitely want to hold space in the public education system, especially in urban areas, for Native students who have to deal with that. Native students who have to sit in a classroom they're forced to be in and learn about how their people no longer exist, or who have to learn about how their people were uncivilized and not able to survive if they had not been helped, which is entirely not the truth. Having to hear that in a public education system as a Native student is traumatizing. And so I go into the classroom trying to hold space for those students and helping them remember that we are not a remnant of the past. We are a piece of today. Native students have every right to be in a school system. They have every right to learn about their people, and they have every right to just be a student. Native students should not have to sit there and educate their educators and sometimes argue about the truth. It's really sad how many Native students have expressed to me, and I've even had this experience myself, of having a disagreement with a teacher regarding something that is 100% the truth in our case. And we have to argue with an educator to let them know that that is the truth. And sometimes they still don't want to believe us. There's been instances about having to take feathers off at graduation, having to play a pilgrim in a school play where there were Native Americans with fake feathers sticking out of their heads, where I was arguing about how bad the gold rush was, and they wanted to explain how good it was for the economy, when all I've ever known about that experience is that almost all Native women were assaulted and Native people were not people, and that the government paid prices for our scalps. And so to hear that that was a good thing to happen in America is really hard. And so my hope is that with the public education system, we at SES can hold space for the students who have to hear things like that, and then also help them engage and realize that they do have a voice. And if they want to get more involved on changing the public education system, here's opportunities to do that too. And so I want to provide opportunities in the public education system that would not be there otherwise, whether that be to be involved in the environmental justice movement, the Native rights movement, the correction and transformation of public education, anything that those students can find meaningful that can encourage them to know that they too hold a place in public education, and that they too belong there, and that they too should go after whatever they want to do, whether it is be a doctor or a politician or a teacher and teach the correct curriculum, that those spaces are open for them. Because although the public education system does stem directly from boarding schools and the genocide of our people, it also holds a lot of power. And we can use that power in order to create positive change for our people.
I'm wondering, how far along are you with your work to spread the curriculum throughout public schools? How's that going? And I'm imagining the goal is to go statewide. Where are we at in that process?
Yeah, so the first curriculum that we created was called the Water Advocacy in Native California Communities Curriculum. That project is actually being implemented in the public education system as we speak. We've held several teachers' trainings trying to show teachers the correct way that this curriculum is meant to be taught, and making sure that it's being taught in a super respectful way to Native students and non-Native students. And so that curriculum is actually in several school systems across the state of California, as well as a lot of support from Humboldt County teachers, where we actually originate from. But it is going statewide right now. And I believe it is in above over 20 plus public schools in the state of California. At least that's how many teachers know how to use it and have that resource. And then there is the traditional and ecological knowledge curriculum that is being finished right now. It's pretty science-based. It revolves entirely around traditional and ecological knowledge from the indigenous perspective, which is pretty much one of a kind in everything that I've seen in the public education system. And so that curriculum is still in the finishing stages. It was in for review and modules are being finished. We don't have an exact date for that release yet, but when it does, it'll be all over our social media, and we will host teachers' trainings to also implement that across the state of California.
I believe also there was a bill that passed recently that aims to expand more inclusive, less racist curriculum toward Native Americans. Can you speak a bit about that?
Assemblymember James Ramos did author a bill that would hopefully make proper Native American curriculum available in all classes across California. That bill is still in process. Hopefully that will be implemented in about 2024. And so that is definitely a great step in the right direction. Assemblymember James Ramos is the first Native American legislator in the state of California. His involvement in this has been amazing. And we're really hoping that with that bill going forward, we'll be able to have resources like the curriculums that SES has created. It would be instrumental in making sure that the curriculum was not only centered around Native Americans, but also had tribal or Native American consultation so that it is done correctly. And so we're hoping that those will be resources that are readily available when those changes to the public education system will be made.
The original podcast was produced by Natalie Kilmer with production support from Carrie Tully, Cassiel Willey, Kendall Krakow, and Regina Chickazoa. It was first heard on November 15th, 2022 in the West Coast Water Justice Podcast as Native Youth Rising. The Friday Edition is a public affairs presentation of KIDE Hoopa Tribal Radio. We thank you for listening.